Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
Hello. Cole Hornaday.
What?
And Chris Casso.
Hello.
How is everybody this fine evening?
Oh, okay. Just freaking peachy. That's what
I got tongue-tied because
peachy, man.
I realized that I gave you the stand I normally have.
Uh-oh, so. Do you want to swap?
Maybe between episodes we'll swap.
I don't like different. Change.
I am captivated by Nicole's eyeshadow, sincerely.
It's my bi pride.
Yeah.
It's my bi flag on my eye.
That, but I was also getting like tropical fish.
Absolutely. Like, it's like, very tropical.
Like poisonous fighting
snake.
Fish colors. She has this lovely blend where it's blue to red. And,
I think queer snake suits me. I think that's okay. Yeah.
Queer snake stance.
Well, it's a lovely spring evening here in Seattle, and did one of those things today where it was sunny, then in rain, and sunny again.
And rain.
So
yep.
Welcome to Seattle. Welcome to the Northwest. If you don't like the weather, wait a few minutes. It'll change.
Well, I was driving over here, and there are these beautiful, billowing white, pearly white thunderheads. But, you know, it looks like thunderheads or storm clouds are gathering here, but then they don't do anything.
They're going to be like pearly white gates. It's like, don't go to the light, Cole.
Just give me a ladder, buddy.
They're just hanging off the over the water ominously. Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of the Northwest, if you are in the Northwest and near Olympia, our lovely state's capital, you can go to the Olympia Comics Festival on Saturday, June 15th. It's a comics festival and not a comic con. I just noticed that distinction. It's one day only, and it's at a couple of different venues. The Cartoonists Expo is at the Olympia Center. I don't know where that is. I grew up in Olympia, by the way, which is why I'm bringing this up and why I don't know where some places are. The stage shows at the Capitol Theater, which I do know where that is, and that's a lovely place. And signings are in the Danger Room on 4th Avenue. But notably, Emil Ferris, author of My Favorite Thing is Monster, is going to be there.
Yeah.
That's quite a get.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. I figured this is kind of like smaller convention we have here. That's not a convention.
Like Short Run?
Short Run. Yeah. It's like Short Run. Yeah.
And she'll
style.
Appear at a thing like a Short Run.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. She was there two
she
years
was,
ago.
Yeah.
And I missed her.
Yep. They got Craig Thompson of Blankets here.
Which
there.
Totally makes sense.
And they got Benjamin Dewey, who I just completely badmouthed his piece of work last episode or two ago.
But you
still I
still love
like
him.
You.
Oh, yeah. Craig Thompson does Space Dumplings.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Whale poop.
Yeah, exactly. There's a preview night the night before at the Olympia Library. OlympiaComicsFestival.org. Check it out. We're not being paid to advertise them. I just thought it'd be fun to mention if anybody wanted to go down there. That is this Saturday if you are listening to this as it's being dropped. I might want to go. Oh, I can't on June 15th. Dang it, but I might want to go and meet those people. Anyway... let's move on to what's going on. And from the Boy That Was Fast department, DC has already canceled Swamp Thing because reasons.
Yeah, I just saw that.
Complicated reasons.
Yeah. Complicated budgetary reasons.
Well, and they just had that problem with the like cutting the episode short, but then going resuming schedule.
I think wasn't this that, is all part of it.
Wasn't
is,
that all?
Yeah. Is it film companies, and this is something that's we run into here in Washington State, is that film companies expect a tax break or even a subsidy to produce within the state, which is something I've never really understood considering how much money they put into producing stuff. And in this particular case, I'm a little bit befuddled because it is, after all, under the Warner Brothers umbrella, and they're producing these shows for their DC platform relatively inexpensively. So I think the deal was that they were expecting the show cost 80 plus million to produce, the series rather. And was it North Carolina or South Carolina?
North Carolina.
North Carolina was supposed to give them a $40 million tax break.
12 million.
Oh, dear me.
Yeah.
You know, I got a master's degree in acting, so I don't have to be mad.
Are you remembering different details?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, no, and I thought 12 was what they got, that they wanted the bigger number.
Oh, okay.
But now I'm not sure.
Maybe that's why I misread it. But part of the confusion also is that, when the original season was scheduled to be 12, and then there was all the hoopla on Twitter that they cut it down to 10.
Yeah.
But then when Ben posted the link about the latest update, it said they were only going to be airing two episodes?
That is untrue.
Oh, okay.
okay. I've just learned all this right. just in.
We can't keep anything straight here.
According
neither
to,
can they.
So. According to IO9, it will air in full on okay. DC Universe
yeah,
over the next couple
weeks.
Yeah,
because that makes sense to me, because you just dump everything.
Yeah.
Unless part of their post-production budget was smacked upside the head.
Yeah, they got some yeah. North Carolina editor working on this show. I doubt that. I mean, see, apologies to all the video editors in North Carolina.
Not really, but yeah. What I was thinking is, because at first when it sounded like, oh, they're only put two episodes and then the rest is just footage going into the storage, I was just like, well, what they can do is they can just kind of put little bits and pieces into the DC universe. And it's kind of like Ridley Scott putting unicorns into stuff because he had all that extra footage from Legend. And it's just like, yeah. Little...
No. That was part of his original director's cut for Blade Runner.
Sure.
But don't we want Swamp Thing the unicorn? I do.
Yeah. Swamp Thing is a unicorn to some people.
Actually,
so
when they released that, I'm sorry, I'm going to go off on a tangent about Blade Runner, but when they released that director's, quote unquote, director's cut, back in, I was so miffed back in the early 90s because from all I could tell was that was the only new stuff
unicorn.
In it. Was the monologue in the end and the unicorn that was, as far as I was concerned, as far as everyone's concerned, was from Legend.
It is from
okay,
Legend.
Thank you for letting me make that about me for a moment. Let's move on.
I didn't even know that, so that's good information for
Seriously?
Someone like me. I didn't. I thought, I worshipped at the altar of Ridley Scott. I thought the unicorn was part of his big
information
mission.
That was of value to you,
Jesus
Ben.
Jesus Christ.
He's kind of insane.
It's going to be a long night, Ben.
It's
going to
be a long night. We are just getting
just
started.
The beginning.
Speaking of starting new things, Tom King and Ava DuVernay are going to co-write the New Gods movie. I was excited about this because Ava DuVernay, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, I don't know. Ava or Ava is a director who's also attached to direct the New Gods movie, and she has a show on Netflix right now called When They See Us about the Central Park Five case, and I watched the entire thing Monday night, and I didn't know it was a narrative piece. I thought I was just settling in for like a dry but fascinating and informative documentary, and I got so much more, and I was up until 2:30 in the morning watching the entire thing. So I have a new excitement for this.
So what you're going to say is this is going to be doubly depressing now.
Absolutely.
Because Tom King, Miracle Man, is super depressing and good, but
very
soul
good,
shattering.
But yeah. And Vision is super dark, and like so much he touches is dark.
Yeah.
And he's doing the Batman. I don't know why he has the
Batman. All the new DC movies have the.
And I just added that because I'm tired.
Accurate.
Yeah, but I was talking to my friend Paul earlier today, and he's actually excited about this because with Kirby's The New Gods and the way it looks, it really fits in. It melds well with the aesthetic that Ava DuVernay had with her previous movie, Wrinkle in Time, which I had not seen. And you love how
I've seen it.
I was vamping there because I was pulling it up, and I didn't remember the name of the title.
Did you like it?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. I think, like, if I saw that as a kid, I would have just been like, whoa, you know? Because that's when I read Wrinkle in Time, and it was very poignant to me then. Mm-hmm.
Did it have the big, like, Kirby-esque color palette?
It's very bright. I mean, depending on what world they're going to and what they're doing. So, yeah. I mean, as long as they stick to having really being heavily inspired and doing the Jack Kirby art style, I think it could be really visually stunning. Mm-hmm. But they try to do some sort of like, I'm interpreting it, and it's like, no.
No.
Like a cat with something on the table, just like, kick it off. No.
No.
My table.
Whether or not the New Gods will be tied to DC's shared movie universe is not yet known.
Shared? I guess.
Yeah.
If they feel like it.
The Justice League, the Batman, the Suicide Squad, the Suicide Squad.
It's fine if they don't
the
have the. They don't have to like completely like, no, it's not connected. It's just like you just don't have to force it down our throats.
Right.
Like Superman v Batman, the people's case did. Because it's just like, no, man, five heroes in one movie showing up in Origins and all that. And like, no.
No.
You had to do the Marvel way. It took 10 years.
Yeah.
You can't do it in 3 months.
Yeah.
You know?
The Mother Boxes were in Justice League, and that's a New Gods thing.
Yeah,
so
they were.
All right.
Still haven't seen Justice League.
Nope.
May never.
It's
my husband actually tried to see it. He tried to watch it on the plane, and he couldn't get past the beginning with Superman and people's like cell phones or whatever. I don't know. The opening scene, he just like watched like 2 minutes, and he was like, Nah,
I'm done.
I'm gonna watch something else.
I don't even remember.
See, there you go.
That's how much of an impact that movie had on me.
Yeah.
Speaking of having an impact, Bruce Lee. We talked about this in an episode of The Panel Jumper. Mm-hmm. Bruce Lee actually wrote up a treatment for a TV show about a warrior who travels the countryside, righting wrongs, mm-hmm. and doing what's right. And the networks turned him down. But then, lo and behold, a year later, the TV show Kung Fu came on the airwaves with a white David Carradine mm-hmm. in the lead role. Well, they have decided to make The Warrior. It is currently on Netflix, or not Netflix, Cinemax. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know Cinemax was still a thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I haven't seen it. This New York Times article is kind of lukewarm on it. Hmm. But I'm excited that this exists.
Yeah. Did it get renewed for a second season?
I do not believe that has been released yet.
Okay. All right. I'm curious about it, too, just because because that's why I included it in the episode, was to sort of to acknowledge Bruce Lee's continual inspiration and impact on popular culture so long after his death, and not just American popular culture, but all over the world. I mean, it tells you something like that in Hong Kong, they aired the Green Lantern TV series, not Green Lantern, Green Hornet TV series, but they called it the Keto Show. I mean, at first I thought that was a joke when they mentioned it in the Dragon movie, but I went and looked and it's like, no, they called it the Keto Show. Because why not? Why do they want to focus on a white, privileged white guy when the action is all around the Bruce Lee characters, all around Kato, and audiences in Japan, I should stop talking. Audiences in Hong Kong are going to be identifying with him and are going to see the representation there.
I want to see a modern remake of that version mm-hmm. where it shows all the scenes and the Green Hornet giving all these like orders, and then there's new scenes where everybody's just like, why does he keep talking to you like that? That man, aren't you the boss? And he's like, I let him think he's the
yes,
boss.
Exactly.
It's for the best. Exactly. He gets the attention in the green shirt. I do the work.
that may be on the horizon for us at some point.
They shoot bullets at the white man. We're good. We're good. Man.
He deflects the bullets for me by taking them.
Yes. Yes. Reading this article about
Kato and Meat Shield. Yeah.
I'm interested to see the show, but it also makes me just want to go back and watch a bunch of Bruce Lee movies.
Yeah.
Which you should just do anyway.
Yeah.
It's true.
Absolutely. Way of the Dragon.
And isn't there, there's a Bruce Lee exhibit right now at the Wing Luke Museum, and I can't remember the name of it, and I think it goes till the end of the summer.
Hmm. Yeah, it's been there for a while.
Yeah, and I every time I see the app pop up on my feet, I'm like, oh, I gotta make time to see that, because it's something they brought back, I believe, or at least a different version of the exhibit that they've had in the past. It's about his life in Seattle, so it's primarily his growing up here and his Seattle-centered life.
Yeah, something else you can do if you're in Seattle is go to the Lakeview Cemetery mm-hmm. on Capitol Hill and visit Bruce Lee and Brandon Lee.
See Ben and I on location in the Panel Jumper episode.
Yeah, indeed. we had no idea where it was when we were shooting. I just figured we'd drive around and we'd find it eventually.
And we found these two beautiful stones that were surrounded by flowers and people just sort of drifting around. And we actually had to ask people to step away for just a couple of minutes.
Yeah, we were polite about
it. It's a shrine.
There were some people there who were paying their respects, and we didn't like barge in. We waited for them to leave.
No, I went up and said, hey, we're going to shoot this bit. We're going to try and do it quickly. And they were really cool. But mm-hmm. I felt badly about interrupting people, because there are people who travel from all over the world to see both he and Brandon's grave, because they're beside each other. Mm-hmm.
Since Rebirth, DC saw many titles shipping twice monthly, which is what they call double shipping, apparently. Yeah. That's a term I hadn't heard of before. Mm-hmm. But that's coming to an end.
Yay!
As retailers, how do you feel? Oh, okay, I guess I have my answer.
well, they offer more Bat titles anyway and all these other side things, so it's not like
Yeah, it's not a true reduction, but yeah, it's one of those things of like, yeah, it does increase overall bottom line sales, I guess, is one way to look at it. But also, like, we have a cycle system in the store where we only keep 6 months worth of a title on the shelf because we only have limited space. And so that, unfortunately, when it's being double shipped like this, we have to leave them a little bit longer now, and we just don't have the space for that. So, and also that tends to have creative teams that get a little tired.
Yeah.
And you have, they've been better about it than Marvel, about having creative teams that can cycle and it's planned a little bit better, mm-hmm. but it still means you don't have a consistent singular creative team. And you have a lot of guest artists. They did it better, I'll say. Marvel, no.
I think we were talking about this. It may have been during the Rebirth era, or maybe even in regards to Marvel. But I do remember us having a discussion where you all were worried that books were going to be delayed because people were just going to get burnt out.
Yeah. That didn't really happen with the core titles. I think they planned it better and they had the backup artist ready to go for the next story arc.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall any major delays. The major delays are in the events. Like Doomsday Clock is still going on.
Yeah, and that's been delayed, which also delayed Heroes in Crisis for a little while,
did finally
too.
Just finish.
Yeah.
So there's that. So, yeah.
But DC is now starting to pull some things that Marvel's doing where they're saying, you know, to order this thing, you need to order 90% of some other issue to qualify to unlock this other thing. We've talked about weird ratio variants and stuff.
Yeah.
DC's hasn't really played that. They've had order all you want stuff, but they're doing them on specific things.
Well, they're doing it for returnability, which is kind of like, oh, just let me return it.
Yeah, it's still a game that it has a stop, look at the numbers, what do I do,
yeah.
Got to do the thing. It's more work, and overall, I just don't like that system.
Yeah,
no, and I really appreciate a DC. It's a shorter section. It's less work. I hate Marvel.
Yeah.
As a manager now, I deeply hate Marvel. As a fan, I like them all right.
Yeah.
So
I like them okay.
They're fine. They do good things sometimes.
When it comes to the ordering, it's interesting how that will affect your overall decision.
Oh, God. Yeah. Because,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's like hitting the brick wall with Marvel.
Yeah.
Marvel. So, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So they're still trying to pump up their numbers in other ways, too.
Yeah,
and
do
have miniseries and reprints and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
The Dark Crystal: Age of Resistance dropped a trailer. Woo-hoo. It's going to be coming to Netflix August 30th. I'm super pumped about this.
So's
cool.
I'm very, very.
Yeah, you know it's good when I just like cry, just like sob, and
really?
Yeah, yeah.
Was there any one
when like
thing?
Black Panther was coming out? Yeah. I like sobbed on the floor.
Was there any one moment in the teaser trailer that excited you, or was this the whole?
Well, come on!
I get to go back to that world.
Come on!
Was it the Skeksis voice
at
the end?
Girl, I like the Skeksis, but I liked a lot of the physical, you know, the puppetry, like seeing
that they're still puppets.
Yeah, seeing that they're still puppets.
It's a good mix of puppet and CGI.
And so there was CGI, but there was like some more worlds that you could mm-hmm. simulate the worlds. And I know how much they've world-builded that whole thing mm-hmm. to just do like a tiny segment. So there were so many elements. It would switch to another thing and I'd be like, and then switch to another thing and I'd be like, you know? So, yeah.
That's one of my favorite things about the original movie is that moment in the woods
mm-hmm.
where everything just very slowly comes alive.
Yes.
And everything comes alive.
Yes.
And, when I was in high school, a friend of mine gave me the Dark Crystal art book, which was this lovely mm-hmm. thing that's like this big, and it has parched tone leaves in it, like a real art book. And Brian Froud just went, he must have been in heaven when he was designing all that
mm-hmm.
because it's just the details and all those things. And, you know, Labyrinth is fun for what it is, but it doesn't have that total depth, beauty of design that goes, you know, what I like to call all the way to the rivets
mm-hmm.
or
mm-hmm.
all the way to the wood knobs or something.
It's a balance.
But yeah.
Dark Crystal has the world and Labyrinth has Bowie's bulge. And
very distracting.
Yeah.
I can't rewatch that movie. It's very distracting.
That was amazing.
Teaser, there's those wonderful things like there. You see the little helicopter
critters.
And I'm like, that's real. You can make one of those out of paper. And isn't it cool that he came up? I'm assuming Froud or a protege of his designed all of this. I haven't bothered to look because everything looks like his stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But to see them, you know, twirling down
mm-hmm.
and then these critters crawling out literally out of the woodwork.
There was a big spidery guy.
And there's a big
spider.
Yeah,
and there's those weird like rabbit like giraffe creatures that are still around.
The striders.
Mm, yeah. And then like when we saw the witch's room again with the rotating.
Yeah.
I mean everything. Everything in the trailer.
Were there Krabby Beetle guys?
I didn't see Krabby Beetle guys.
Gotham.
Magra? Is she
Agra.
The voice actress of Agra nailed it. I was surprised it's not the same person. There's a really fascinating behind the scenes making of documentary on the original Dark Crystal. If you haven't seen it, you should watch it.
Mm-hmm.
This Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance, is a prequel directed by Louis Leterrier, and he says that he's been staying up for 22 hours straight to finish this film. It's due to drop on August 30th. He still has a couple months. That's not sustainable. I doubt that he's actually doing that.
I don't know. Did you ever see the featurettes of The Hobbit? Like, basically, that man did not sleep. He slept there. And then, like, they would wake him up on the couch. He's like, more gold in the dragon's room. Keep going. So I could believe these guys just basically, like, I got to do it. We got to do all this, you know.
As somebody who has worked with a director, having the director up for 22 hours is not that big of a deal. It's the poor soul on the computer, who's also up for 22 hours, that we have to worry about.
Well, remember, Lucas's wife was editing Star Wars the day it opened, and isn't that one of the stories that he's driving? He's driving the cans across Hollywood Boulevard to Grauman's for the grand opening or something like that, or the premiere.
The film was still wet.
Yep.
In my head, I just like the idea of her, like, literally, it's showing in the theater, and she's just like, like rolling it and cutting bits, and like, no, that goes there. George!
That's
George!
I've had the, that's a lot more funny when you have to deal with film, but I've been to screenings at independent cinema houses where somebody just brings their laptop from their home. It just plugs it into the projector, man. And opens up Final Cut Pro.
Classic.
That happened at the Film Forum once. It was awesome.
Nice. Wow.
DC Inc. is an imprint from DC aimed for the young adults.
Yeah.
And they are they've announced some titles: Teen Titans, Beast Boy, and more, which they look pretty fun.
Yeah, we've got a couple of them in so far. I'm always blurring the line between their Ink and Zoom.
Yeah, Zoom is kids, Ink is teen, I think.
So Ink has had Mara and
Catwoman
so far.
Mm-hmm.
And they've done okay for us over here so far.
Yeah. Coming up is The Oracle Code, which will follow Barbara Gordon in the immediate aftermath of her infamous assault by the Joker, which doesn't really sound like a teen book to me, but okay.
But it looks like the return of Oracle, so I'll take it.
Yeah.
There's a cute Swamp Thing coming out called, like, Swamp Kid, and it's like a Diary of a Wimpy Kid kind of thing.
Shadow of the Batgirl.
Shadow of the
Batgirl. That's Cassandra. Looks like this is how I'm getting all of my early 2000s DC superhero fix back here.
Yeah. So they bring it back for you, young adult.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
Yeah, so they're doing a lot of good stuff. I think the only bad one in the batch so far is Super Sons. It's like whoever got that did not get the editorial notes that Damian is not a sweet boy and cares about what his dad thinks about him.
They did not read the Tomasi Bible.
They should have. Yeah.
And we're going to talk in an upcoming episode about how well young adult comics are doing for the book industry. But yeah,
well.
check out these DC Inc. titles. Links in the description. Let's move on to book report, everybody. And Chris Casso, let's start with you.
Do you want to tag team
that first?
Yeah. Sure. And Cole Hornaday.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we both read Batman: The Last Knight on Earth, which is by Scott Snyder and Capullo, the team who did all the New 52 Batman and Dark Metal. And I guess this is supposed to be like their swan song, their thematic ending of their work together. And it's done for the DC Black Label, so it's basically an Elseworlds.
Yeah.
It don't count. How did you like it?
I was really surprised how much I liked it. And honestly, I only read the Snyder Capullo trades of the Court of the Owls.
Yeah.
And I may have read some around that one had a great impact on me. I was surprised how much I enjoyed those. And honestly, I got caught up in the hype on Instagram because they had animated GIFs on Instagram. And I was like, oh, that looks intriguing. It's an Elseworlds story, but for me, it's a mashup of madness tropes. Because it's like, I think at 3 points, it takes turns that we've been, it goes around corners that we've been to before.
Yep.
And it's not necessarily fresh, but the fact that, so it starts out and Bruce Wayne is in a sanitarium and he's apparently been under.
Not quite there yet. There's one pre-trope before that trope. There's the setup for that trope, which is that he is solving a case where somebody is leaving chalk outlines across the city.
Right. Yeah.
And the chalk outlines form a giant Batman across the city.
Sure.
And the heart of the chalk line is Crime Alley. And he goes to investigate it, and something bad happens to him. And then we hit what you got.
I thought that was a dream that led into him awakening in the sanitarium.
Still so issues to go into it. So
yeah,
maybe.
So my point being that we've seen this trope before.
Yes.
It's like the protagonist who's, you know, we have this established storyline. The protagonist wakes up in a sanitarium or someplace and someone is, you know, patting their arm saying, "I'm sorry, dear, it's all been a terrible, terrible dream." Mm-hmm. We've seen it a dozen times. And then, and I'm like, oh, well, that's too bad because we've been here so many. And then it takes another left turn.
What a twist.
Yeah.
Is that three left turns?
There's like four or five in this, yeah. But it keeps turning into the tropes, and because it keeps exposing those storytelling aspects that we already know, I kind of enjoyed how the cards started stacking one on top of the other. And by the time we get to the end, which is still of this, it's three parts, right?
Basically, yeah. Three parts.
I mean, three
chapters.
Parts, three parts.
Series. Oh, three issues. Yes. Yeah.
So I'm assuming there's probably going to be more of the same as we go. Mm-hmm. But because it's this layering the way it is, I'm kind of fascinated by it because I don't know if they did it, Snyder did it consciously, but he's kind of like, well, we've done every Elseworlds kind of story we possibly can. Hey, let's just do a mashup because. As Andrew Lee Creech and I discovered as we were writing the next Panel Jumper episode, there's imitation, there's flattery, and then there's riffing on something to create kinship in your storytelling, to acknowledge that which has come before and lift and elevate and create something new. And I kind of, I was enjoying it because I was seeing that happening in this. Mm.
Some homage.
Yes.
Yeah. So like we have the trope of the insane asylum thing, which Batman has done plenty of times, where somebody like Hugo Strange is like, oh no, it's not real. Mm-hmm. But then it also turns into Mad Max after that.
That's right.
And he's accompanied by the severed head of the Joker. And that
carries around in a lantern or something.
Yeah. And then like you get to meet like Wonder Woman, and there's another flip of a trope in here, which is the Mark Millar wanted old man Logan trope of like all the villains got together and killed all the heroes. This time they kind of flip it and say like basically people just suck and they did it without the villains' help. And it's like, oh, I can appreciate that. That's truth. People suck.
And they're all dressed like they're out from the extra cast from Mad Max.
Yep.
Yeah.
So yeah, just good setup. Interesting. And I mean, so it's three parts. They're prestige bound. They're $6. I feel like that was worth the $6.
Capullo's artwork is terrific. The colors are exceptional. I love the color cover graphic.
It feels good too.
It does. It's but when I walked into the store and said I was going to review it, and Chris was like, "But I'm going to review it," and then he stops and he looks at me, and goes, "How'd you get a copy?"
Yeah, we sold out.
So I was going to ask because we've talked about speculators in the past that people swarm the store and buy up multiple copies.
Every Wednesday we have certain people coming in, and I sometimes feel like I have to hide books so that other customers can have a chance for them. But this one actually it lasted for like 2 days or so, and I do have some first prints on the way right now, but it is going the second print already. So we'll see, and hopefully the DC Black Label won't implode and they won't cancel the next two issues again.
I called around because it was sold out elsewhere in town.
Yeah.
So question, if people are following the Snyder Bat story, what would be the reading list or the reading order to do that?
So start with the Black Mirror, which is pre-52, and then do all the new 52, which is just the core Batman title, and then do Dark Metal, and then do this.
Okay.
And I think that's everything.
So, and he's working on DC Year of the Villain, right? Isn't Snyder doing that? But that's like a Lex Luthor thing, but then it's also with other writers.
That's Justice League. So he's doing Justice League.
Yeah.
You're the Villain's not really an event. It's like an umbrella theme.
Right.
You know? So I guess you could say he's kind of an architect behind it.
Yeah.
It's a little vague how that stuff comes together.
Right.
Because I still believe that a lot of that's Geoff Johns hiding in the background. Like the Emperor. Yeah.
So, so the list that you said is just this pure, like, if Scott Snyder.
Pure you know, Snyder. Snapulo.
Snyderverse.
Knighter.
Snipuloverse.
Snipuloverse, yeah. Yeah, that would be just the core focus, you know. Nice. And, like, Black Mirror, you could say, might not count, but it's them starting Batman.
Okay.
And it's a good story.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Thank you.
Right on. Batman, Last Night on Earth. K-N-I-G-H-T, of course.
Yes.
Cool. Thank you, y'all. Nicole, what do you got for us?
Thank you, y'all. So it's June, so it's gay pride time. And so I wanted to highlight some gay things. And, of course, I have to talk about manga at least one of these episodes.
Oh, yeah.
So a long, long time ago, I don't know how long, too long, I talked about Go For It Nakimura, which is by Shunde. I think how you say it. It's S-Y-U-N-D-E-I. I Google translated, so let's see. It says Sayunde, but it's wrong because it's trying to do English. Anyway, and Go For It Nakimura was just a really nice, lighthearted slice of life, boys love, where it's just an awkward teen who has a crush on his classmate kind of thing. And then they came out with this other manga. It seems to be doing just one-and-done kind of mangas. This one's called Total Eclipse of the Eternal Heart, and it is also a one-and-done. This person really has range because this is it's still boys' love, but it is a erotic horror manga. It's mature. If the erotica didn't tell you.
Are there tentacles?
So here's a good distinction. Thanks for asking about the tentacles.
Yeah. Anytime.
If it is actual like manga pornography, then it will have tentacles. it'll have pants parts is what I'm going to call it. Pants parts. But this is a mature thing, so it's not pornography. So everything is whited out.
Mm.
So there are sexual acts that are displayed in here, but there are no pants parts. Mm. So do with that what you will. Yeah, pants parts. So this story follows a high schooler, Hoshino Tsuramichi, and he's haunted by this recurring dream of this person who he's calling Sensei who causes his death. And he has a friend who seems to have like a crush on him. And then like they're walking around one day and somebody comes up and stabs his friend. And as his friend is like bleeding and all that, he just says two more to go. And he gets up and he walks away. And he's like, Hoshino is just like, what? And he tries to track down where his friend is. And his friend's living with this artist who is having a sexual relationship with him. And there's just something weird with his friend, clearly. Like, there's people who keep coming and trying to kill him, but he seems to be immortal. And there's this story called Total Eclipse of the Eternal Heart that seems to have a connection to it. And it just, that's pretty much all I'm going to say without just totally unraveling what everything's happening. But it's like, he's having a dream. He has this strange reality going on. Are they connected? What's going on? What's his connection to this friend and everything? It was very dark. There is lots of murder in it and sexual themes. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was great. Delightful. One thing that I would say about like boys love manga in general, or just like the girls love boys love stuff, is a lot of times it's made for just like kind of popcorn consumption of just like, isn't gay cute? It's cute, right? Let's tell stories about gay things. But it's not like gay. It's always like, oh, but don't worry, because we're all just straight. We just think like girls are cute and that's why we crush on girls. And it's like, what? But you're gay. But you're not? But wait, I'm confused. So it like never goes fully gay, even though it does. If that makes sense. It's like for the entertainment value, but not for actually being LGBT material. And so what I like about Shunde is she's a female creator. I don't know much about her, but she doesn't seem to do that thing where there's always a point where a character is like, but I'm not gay. I just like you, which is it just drives me nuts. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate this because it's just straight up gay they'll say the word gay. A lot of times they avoid that in mangas. So I'll definitely be following Shunde stuff. Hopefully I'm not butchering that. I did Google Translate, so I am trying. And I also like that they're one and done. A lot of times people think, like, I can't get in a manga. It's like 89 volumes of something. Like, I just right. can't track that long. So having just a one and done, here's some gay stuff, go have a good time, and, you know, maybe come back next year and something will come to America then. So yeah, so I definitely recommend picking up their stuff.
There needs to be a banner that you put on somewhere in the store where it just says, one and done, here's some gay stuff.
You know I will. It is June right now. They're both published by Seven Seas Entertainment. The cute, nice, teen-related thing, Go For It Nakimura, is $13, but the mature stuff's a dollar extra because it's smutty. Yeah. I made that reason up. But they're totally worth checking out.
Cool.
All righty.
It was not really supposed to be a dual thing, but still.
Perfectly all right.
Gay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Nicole. Well, that is Book Report. That is our show. Coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com, as well as Comic Extension here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsextension.com. Subscribe to the show on iTunes or however you get your podcast at perfectboundpodcast.com. Send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. And now, friends, get your quiz hats on. It's quiz time this week. Questions come to us from Mr. Chris Casso. Lay it on us, Chris.
So as everybody knows, I'm obsessed with Transformers and now with Gundam. Uh-oh. So there's a lot of mecha. So I thought I would focus on the mecha they don't talk much about. So this one is called Mecha Mecha High Mecha Heine Ho.
Yes!
Yes!
Or in a Jan Brady voice, Mecha Mecha Mecha.
All right, bonus points for all of that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank
you. You really went to your happy place for this one.
Yes.
That's marvelous.
This mecha anime TV series aired in Japan from 1981 to 1982, featuring a young boy named Hiro Takai, who finds a gold lighter that turns into a giant golden warrior whose mission is to save Earth from the dreaded King Ibalda. He would often use the golden hand strike where he literally rips out the heart of his enemies. What is the name of this little-known obscure anime?
Yeah, Gold,
Gold Lighten. The toy is literally just a robot that turns into a solid brick of gold. It's supposed to be a lighter.
Gold.
And he would hang out in his little human friend's pocket, you know? So, next. This brave giant robot-like protector of the lost continent of Mu had a popular TV series that airs from 1975 to 1976. After a slumber of 12 millennia, the Demon Empire awakens to seize control of the Earth. A young Japanese boy, Akira Hibiki, is alerted about the Demon Empire by a mysterious voice and is soon revealed that Akira is a descendant of the ancient people of Mu, and he must help the robot save the Earth. What is this?
Is that Johnny Sacco?
No.
Oh, man.
I feel like I should know this. I think, no? I think.
I feel like I don't know this.
Brave Radin.
Oh, okay,
I'm
no.
sucking at this.
Something, he's got, like, a very pointy head. I think they did make a Shogun Warrior out of him at some point.
They did.
Yeah. Yeah. Next, originally running in 1988 to 1994, this manga series featured robots called laborers that are employed in heavy construction work. The Tokyo Metropolitan Police has its own fleet of patrol laborers to combat crime and terrorism and deal with accidents involving laborers. The popular franchise includes a manga, a TV series, two OVA series, three feature-length movies, two light novel series, and a short film compilation, plenty of video games and licensed products from original soundtracks to toys. What is it?
Pat Labor.
Yes.
Wow.
Neat little robots. This military science fiction mecha anime series that started in 1983 follows the main weapon of a century-old galactic conflict, the common armored trooper, a mass-produced humanoid combat vehicle piloted by a single soldier. However, since armored troopers have extremely thin armor and use a highly combustible liquid in their artificial muscle, their pilots have a very low chance of survival and are commonly referred to instead as bottoms, the lowest of the low. What is this show called? They're green robots. They kind of all look the same. Yeah. Armored Trooper Votums. VOTAM stands for Vertical One-Man Tank for Offense and Maneuvers.
I was going to say, eeny, meeny, greeny, bikini bottoms.
Yeah, I'll go with it. Last one. Cryptic religious allegories, interpersonal drama, intense pathos and deep psychological trauma, post-apocalyptic existential horror, child endangerment, giant robots that might be your mother. These are all favorite subjects of creator Hideki Anno, who directed this TV series that launched in 1995 that has been credited as the rebirth of the anime industry and has become a cultural icon.
Evangelion?
Yeah. Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Oh, I've never pronounced it correctly.
I've never seen that.
What's it called?
I watched like the ripoff.
Evangelion.
Rastathon.
Neon Genesis Evangelion.
They're it's spindly armed robots that kind of look very angelic and
mm-hmm. Yep.
But they're mechics, so they're huge, giant.
They're big guys. Yep. And that's it. Just occurred to me that I don't think I've ever mentioned them once on this podcast, and it's one of my favorite things.
Really?
So, all right. But I'd at cool. least end it on that note.
All right. Well, thank you, Chris. And thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.